This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You might have heard recently about the Radical Compassion Campaign, working to preserve, promote, and restore the dignity, value, and independence of every human without distinction or judgment. And Sister Grace Miller is the founder of the House of Mercy in Rochester. We asked Sister Grace to come on, talk a little bit about not only the campaign, but sort of the state of homelessness and need in our community as we head toward the tougher winter months. Sister Grace, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you very much.
And let me also welcome Earl Thomas, a House of Mercy volunteer. Earl, thanks for making time for us. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and thank you for having me.
Sister Grace, let's start with how you define what radical compassion means.
Well, radical compassion is going way out of your way to help anybody in need, no matter what the need is. The person with radical compassion, their heart reaches out to the person, and whatever the need is, no matter how hard, how difficult, the person with radical compassion reaches out to that person and gives the person all the help that they need so that they can come to grips with their lives, so they can love themselves and whatever they need to help them to live through any crisis in their lives. So it's really giving our all to people who come to us with whatever kind of need they have.
Sister, when you talk about really kind of going all out, even entering places of pain, on one hand, I hear that as a call for action. On the other hand, tell me if I'm wrong here, I hear that as a mild criticism of even those who might be helpful in certain ways. They might write a check here and there, but that might be the extent of their giving or charity here. Am I reading that wrong, or do you find yourself mildly critical of people who probably could do more, but write a check and then sort of go on with their day?
Well, we'll accept any help we can get.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. And if people write us a check, you know, we're very grateful for it because it helps us to help the people in need. So I'm not critical of them because we have received many checks and many people are so willing to help us in so many ways that so far we're able to, you know, continue. And we're able to continue on the donations that people have given us monetarily and even clothing and food and whatnot. People are constantly bringing things to us for our people. So, you know, we accept the donations, whatever they are, and you know, we always hope for more money, of course. But, you know, many people are very, very generous. And so far, they're the ones that have carried us through and hopefully will continue to carry us through.
Sister, I'm not sure everyone knows your own story and maybe how you would define your desire to live with radical compassion as you did on a winter night in 1984. What happened that really started you down that road? What do you remember about that night?
Well, I remember many times at nighttime, especially in the cold weather, I'd be driving my car and at night and I would find homeless men on the streets. And I couldn't leave them there. I would stop the car and pick them up and take them to homeless shelters. And the biggest shock for me at that time was that the homeless shelters refused to take them in. And this shocked me because I just thought that every homeless shelter existed to take care of the homeless, you know, to bring them in. And this happened very frequently. And one bad winter in particular, the snow was deep and, you know, the blizzard-like weather. And I was driving, and because it was so bad, some of the churches opened up their basements for the homeless. And I was driving through the streets on this horrible night, and I saw a man walking down the street, and I thought, he's going to freeze to death. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to pick him up when I saw he was heading towards one of the churches whose basement was supposed to be open. And there were two men standing outside the church doors waiting for the church to open up. Well, I took the men and put them in my car to keep them warm until the church opened up. We even drove around the city and came back. And we went back down into the basement. And I said, I have three homeless men here. Would you take them in? And they said, no, they refused. They said they didn't have room. And I saw, you know, church basements are large. And I saw there was plenty of room. So I begged them to take the men in. They were refusing. So I asked them if they would call another church. They called another church, and that church said they were full. They couldn't take them in. So I begged them, please take the men in, because where were they going to go on this horrible night? So they took one. So that left me with two men. And so I went to, I didn't want them to call another church, because if I over the phone, it's too easy to refuse. So I took them on to another church I knew was open, and brought them down into the basement and said, I have two homeless men, would you take them in? And they refused, said they didn't have room. Well, I saw there was plenty of room. And by this time I had had it. And I said, well, then I'm not leaving until and unless you take them in. So they didn't want me hanging around all night, so they took the men in. But that night when I went home, all I could think of was no room in the inn. And I thought, there needs to be a place that's open in Rochester. It's open 24/7 and will bring in any person, any homeless person, any person in need, no matter what the hour. And then I thought, well, I have no money. How can I do this? And then I remembered I'm a Sister of Mercy. So I submitted a proposal to the Sisters of Mercy, and they gave me $20,000 for the year and told me I would have to do my own fundraising, which I had never, ever done in my life. But I want to tell them that. I took the money and ran, you know. So I went around looking for a place. I wanted a large place because I knew once we opened that many homeless people would come in. But I only found a small house, and I thought, well, I better start with this. And that was October 1st, 1985, a small house on Central Park, and opened up. And we not only took in homeless men and people, but people came in from the neighborhood with all kinds of needs. You know, their electricity was shut off. They had no income. They had no medical insurance. They weren't seeing doctors. They were ill and not going to doctors. And so many of the problems there arose right in front of me, and people receiving no income and didn't even know how to go about getting income. So we found ourselves, you know, working with people with basic needs. And so eventually we helped them, and so more people kept coming, and the house got too small, so we moved into another house, a larger house, to accommodate the number of homeless that were coming in. And we still had the same problems people were having, you know, no income. And, you know, they were really, you know, problems, survival problems. And people were dying, too. And we got into the burial ministry, you know, burying people who didn't have money. They couldn't afford burials. And so with whatever the need was, you know, we got into that need and helped our people. And so when we moved into a larger place across the street, that became too small. So then we moved into another larger building, and that was small. So now we're in our fourth largest building, and we still have many people coming in with many of the same needs. You know, no income, can't get jobs, trying to make it and can't make it on their own. Many homeless people coming in, needing help. People who are hungry, whatever the need is, we're here for them. So now we have a place that we have 82 beds and three meals a day, and breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and snacks in between. And we have people who can come in during the day, and people, even people in the neighborhood who might have places to stay, but they don't have food because they're staying maybe with friends or neighbors. And they can stay in those houses, but they're not being fed. So they'll come here to the House of Mercy. And so we have a community that's been established here, people with all kinds of needs. They come here daily. And our numbers are large. And thank God we have the resources to feed them, take care of them. And we try to find housing for them. Whatever the needs are, we try to reach out to them and accommodate them.
Do you look back at your own life, Sister Grace, and think that your own views on what compassion should be, what radical compassion could be, did it cost you jobs or standing in the community?
Yes. I was fired twice.
You were fired twice. What happened?
I was fired twice. I was working for this organization and, you know, reaching out with, and I was doing community organizing. And there was a young man in the neighborhood. He would come to my office and just sit there. That he really had nothing to do, but at least he found comfort in coming to our place. And so I let him come and sit, and he would talk. And, you know, and then one day I had gone out to do some business, came back, and the man was outside and very upset, and said that the director of the program ordered him out of the house and threw water in his face and told him to get out. And I was very upset about it. And the director was having a meeting in one of our community rooms. So I went up to him and I said, "Did you put so-and-so out?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Did you throw water in his face?" He said, "Yes." And I was very upset, told him it was the wrong thing to do. So that was like on a Wednesday night. And on Friday, I was called to his office, and I was fired.
Wow.
But the man needed help. You know, so another time I was taking in homeless people, and people didn't like, well, those in charge didn't like what I was doing, and told me I had to leave. And I didn't want to leave, of course, but they put me out. So I had lost a second job where I was trying to help people, you know, and organize and help them and get them on their feet. But the owner of the program of the place didn't like what I was doing and let me go. And I was working in a church and helping people, and we would do a lot of community organizing. It was when Hanover Houses was still in existence, and there were 7 buildings and 7 stories and a lot of poverty in the neighborhood. And I was the minister of a church, and I was a co-minister. And we would go out and visit every single place, home in the neighborhood, and find out what the people's needs were, and we would try to accommodate them. And the priest who was with me didn't like what I was doing and had me fired. So I lost that job too. And then I was thinking, where can I go now? I try to get jobs, and because I had been fired twice, you know, people didn't want to hire me. And I was going out of town, even in New Jersey. I thought maybe I found a job there. And once the priest heard that, that I've been fired, he wouldn't hire me. So, you know, I was wandering around for about 5 years, not knowing what I was going to do with my life. And I went to St. Mary's University in Texas. I went to a program there and heard about a course on prophets that was being taught at a nearby university. And at the time, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. But then when I took this course on the prophets, it struck me that I was going through what many of them went through. And that gave me hope. I thought, well, I'm not alone in this. And that gave me hope. And so I was able to come back and, you know, try to find my niche. And I had a hard time finding it. And that's, you know, that's when, you know, I started to, I went to the Sisters of Mercy and said I wanted to open a homeless shelter because I had seen so much misery here in the city. And I thought we need to do something, you know, to alleviate that. And so they gave me, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
They gave me a grant, and I was able to open up the House of Mercy October 1st, 1985. And now here we are 35 years later, and we're bigger than we were in 1985. And, you know, that's because of all the support and contributions we were getting. So we can move from one place to another place until we finally have this beautiful place we're at now. And I'm very grateful to the people who made this possible.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, before we get Earl's story, which is so compelling, and as so many stories are of the people that you have worked with, Sister Grace. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about what you need going into the winter. In terms of funding and in terms of items, et cetera, what do you need?
Well, we always need money. That's a given. But we need winter jackets for men and women, but especially for men because we have more men than women. We need winter jackets and boots and gloves, anything to keep them warm. But we also need, you know, we need underwear for men. We need socks. We need hoodies, T-shirts, hats, whatever. Anything a person needs for the wintertime, we need them. But, of course, we need them for many more people because people do come to our doors. You know, if they live here, we take care of them. And we're so grateful if we have jackets, winter jackets to give them. And there was this one man that came to the door one day in dead winter, was very bad weather, and he wanted something to eat. But I noticed that he only had a light sweater on. It was freezing out. So he didn't ask for a jacket or anything. He asked for food. So I gave him a jacket to put on. I was going to give him more gloves and boots after that, but I went and got a plate for him and gave him the plate. Well, when I went to him, he had the jacket on. He was dancing around outside, so happy, kept looking at his jacket. I think he couldn't believe that he had a warm jacket to wear during the winter, and gave him gloves and boots. And that man was so happy, was singing, and he was walking back and forth like he wanted to kiss me. And he, you know, and he would hesitate and he'd walk away and come back and walk away and come back, but so happy to have his jacket on him. And that's, and when he wasn't the only one, there were other men that came for the same reason, and the delight when they had a warm jacket to wear. And they would look at the jackets like they never had one like that before in their lives. These are brand new ones that were donated to the House of Mercy. Mm-hmm. And I was very grateful to the people that had donated them. And the jackets, they go fast. The winter jackets go fast. The boots go fast. Gloves go fast. You know, and all the clothing we have really go fast because there's so many people in need. And we just keep giving them out as we receive them. You know, the generosity of the people is so great, we didn't have to go out and buy, which helps us a great deal. Because it's one thing to have someone come and ask for winter coat or gloves and things like that, and I can come into my office and get it and give it to them. But if I didn't have it, I'd have to go out and buy it. And then we might lose the person, you know, who came mm-hmm. to make that request. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful when we have these things on hand, the supply right here in our hands, so when people come to our door, we can just give it to them. And believe me, they are so happy. It's amazing to see the difference when you give them a warm winter jacket and gloves and food, the joy that comes across them. And they're all so grateful, and they'll say thank you.
So people can drop off clothes, can drop off items and clothes right there at the house?
Right. We just ask the clothes be clean or new. Yes.
Clean or new, you know,
right.
Decent condition, not just something with holes in it. That's all. Yeah.
No, yeah. Decent condition. No, we want clothing that is good, that is clean, that is new, that we can just give to people when they come in and request them. And we get many requests. People are coming to our doors all the time, needing jackets, coats, shirts. Yeah. Under whatever,
yeah.
Boots, even sneakers. Sneakers go real fast here, especially for men. We can get a supply in, they're gone next thing you know, because so many people need them. And it's amazing, you know, to see the people that are really in need. As many people as we help, there still are more people in need. And so we're very grateful when we have all those items to give to them.
Well,
very grateful.
Let me ask a little bit about Earl's story. And Earl, I'm just reading about your absolutely remarkable story. I know you lost your dad when you were 3 months old, so you never really met him. You lost your mother when you were 9. Is that right?
Yes, my mother got murdered when I was 9 years old.
And you end up being raised by whom? What do you remember about sort yep. of? Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, like you said before, my dad died when I was 3 months, and my mother got murdered when I was living in Cleveland, Ohio, when I was 9 years old because somebody broke into our house and tried to rob us, and she got caught in the crossfire of that. So at that time, my sister Shirley happened to raise me, and she was only 21 at the time, which she had took on all of us, which was 5 of us, including herself, made 6 to raise us, just her by herself, along with her children. And I now that I'm older, I have to look at the situation that I am truly grateful for my sister stepping in and raising us, because without her, man, we could have got lost up in the system and who knows what would have happened. So my sister raised me to the best that she could, to her ability, until I was able to get old enough and start trying to find my way. But it's kind of hard when you don't have a mother and a father. So I pretty much started hanging out in the streets, stopped going to school, started seeing people with nice things, you know, all the guys hanging out on the block. And I wanted to be a part of that because part of me felt that I was missing a mom and dad or someone that can be like, everything is going to be okay. Even though my sister did the best that she could, but I still felt like there was a part of me missing. So I think that was the part that drew me out into the streets. And so when I got out there, I started, you know, selling drugs and robbing and stealing. And then one thing led to another. Then I started using drugs because I was trying to be part of, you know, I was trying to fit in like the rest of the people. And that took me down a whirl spin to where I started using from the age of 16 all the way until the age of 45. Yeah, that's how much I did. And how I wind up to get to where I'm at today is I was on DHS. I lost my house and everything once before. So I got on DHS, and I happened to come to the House of Mercy for a work assignment. I had completed the work assignment, and I couldn't come back, so I had to find another work assignment. But the funniest thing is you should never, ever judge a book by its cover. When I first walked down Hudson and seen the House of Mercy and all the people out there, I was like, man, I'm not going to this place. I don't know who these people are. You know, I was judgmental, but didn't know that how much love and compassion that the House of Mercy has for the people here in Rochester, and not just in Rochester and other parts and areas of the city of Monroe County. So I wind up losing my apartment, came homeless. So lucky that I had came and did laundry for Sister Reed and for the House of Mercy at the time. That's Sister Grace remembered me.
Of course she did.
Yeah. Because, and then I realized how many people, how many homeless people was out here in our city of Rochester just alone, and I became one of them. So we all had needs. So, but my problem was addiction, and I was hooked on drugs real bad, and after I lost my place and everything, so I came to Sister Grace and told her what was going on with me. And she opened up her door and said, Earl, you can stay here, you know, until we find a program to put you in. And just so happened, man, by the grace of God, they did. And Sister Grace took me in. They found me a rehab facility to go to. And I happened to go to the rehab facility and get clean only through the grace of God. Mm-hmm. And Sister Grace that was able to happen for me. So when I got out, like a year later, I came back and I told, I didn't tell, I asked Sister Grace, is there something that I can do for her because of what she had done for me? And she said, yeah, I can come and volunteer. And when I came here and I seen me through the people here of the House of Mercy, because I've been homeless, I've been without food, without clothes, you know, friends and family get tired of you sleeping and standing on their couches. So I was in that space where, you know, I know exactly how they feel. I have been where they've been. And she gave me an opportunity to come to start doing the help here at the House of Mercy. And it became, let's say it's a feeling of belonging. Mm. Where I feel, and it's funny, like I feel at home. Like I feel a part of. Like I was feeling, I thought I wanted to be a part of when I was out in the streets.
Well, now you found it, Earl. And I only got to jump in because we're losing time with the program. But your story is emblematic of, I'm sure, the work that Sister Grace hoped would happen when she created this organization 35, 36 years ago. Much more information on their website. Danny over at Abilene sent us a note that on October 22nd, 23rd, they're having a sock drive, a Socktober party to benefit House of Mercy. So I know the tougher months are coming, but let me say, Sister Grace, thanks for the work you're doing. Let's stay in touch, especially over the winter months here.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate this.
Earl Thomas, you are an inspiration, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's all thanks by the giving God of Sister Grace and House of Mercy.
Boy, oh boy, what a story. From the whole team of Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow.